You're listening to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB. Practical know-how to help your farm business.
Hi everybody, welcome to this AHDB Beef and Lamb Podcast. This podcast is part of our Maternal Matters campaign, which is promoting the production of heifers that are efficient, profitable and the future. So today I'm very pleased to welcome Pete Burbidge. Thank you very much for giving up your time. How are you doing?
Well, good, thanks, yeah.
Good. So today we're going to be talking about breeding technologies in the suckle herd and in particular how this can assist with the selection and progression of maternal genetics. But before we start, Pete, can I just ask you to give us an introduction to your farm and all the things that you're on with, what's been going on?
Hi, everyone. I'm Pete Burbidge, part of P&R Burbidge Contracting. Alongside the farm, we run a contracting business, just general farm contracting for forage, muck spreading, baling and general duties. Alongside that, we run the farm, which is, we are 900 acres of predominantly grass. We do grow 200 acres of forage maize and 100 acres of cereals in a rotation of reseeding. And then that maize is fed to the cattle, and we've got a small scale AD plant, 125 kilowatt an hour, which we feed forage to, and in the winter 30% of our gas production is from cow muck, from housed cattle.
Perfect. How many cattle are you running?
So we're running 240 winter calved cows, October, November calving, and then alongside that we've got 60 spring calving. Start to calve the end of February, so try and calve in a 9-week pattern, and with the spring calving herd has only really been introduced in this last 2 years to see whether we can maximise use of breeding balls and infrastructure that we've already got in place.
Okay, and what breed mainly are your cows?
So a Solaire based cow, Solaire cross. Not too focused on pure breeding, but our idea would be to go all Solaire cows and then with a terminal sire as a Chevrolet. We have introduced an Angus, but I think that'll be short-lived.
And you're mainly, you're a grass-based system, aren't you?
We are. We grow between 10.5 and 11.5 tonne a hectare a year on the farms. We do rotational graze, very flexible in our rotational grazing. In paddock sizes and days we move the cows, but we do rotational graze. We're quite focused on everything's based around forage.
Cool. So with a herd that size then, 240, how many heifers are you looking to bull every year?
Our heifer selection or heifer numbers have been very influenced on, we're breeding for a high health herd focused on yonis and BVD. We are BVD accredited. The yonis has caused us a lot of problems in the last 4 or 5 years in that we have been culling quite hard, and because of that our heifer numbers have been quite high, and we are introducing sort of 50-60 heifers a year. Our view was to increase the herd to 400 winter calvers. We're not sure whether that's sustainable now, whether we need to just rein that back a little bit, but we'll just see really going forward.
And what, so you say your spring block has just recently been introduced to maximise your UC bulls and your infrastructure. How long have you been autumn block? Forever?
Yeah, we have. So it's something started. The reason we were autumn block, really, and there were lots of disadvantages with calving cows inside, is to work around load, around the workload, around the contracting. We do a maize season, so we're quite focused on the contracting. It's a big part of our income and our business. It's the biggest part of our income and our business. And the calving cows, when we finish maize harvest, really just were fitted in with workload.
Yep.
But the advantage of having cows calving that time of year gives you then to handling them, and when they go out, the calves are stronger, the calves eat the grass, the better use of the grass, our spring grass and summer grass, and that's probably where we feel our biggest asset is, growing grass through the summer to feed to the young stock as well. You know, our daily weight gains now. Our bulls outside a kilo plus a day. Our heifers are just below a kilo a day.
Okay. So you will start. Will you start bulling again before you turn them out?
We bull in January. Yeah,
bull in January. And do you find that obviously with them being in, that'll make that job a bit easier?
Absolutely. Handling stress. We're not bringing them out of fields. They're in yards. They get used to. We do all our work, all our vaccinations is through the winter. So our BVD, we blood test obviously all the animals. We blood test everything pre-calving. just to get on top of the yonis, to make sure we are not, because we're in that environment, the cows are calving or the calves are young when they're inside, when we calve. We do try and calve most of the cows outside. They calve in the autumn outside if we can, unless the weather changes dramatically. And generally, we do not assist with calving. We focus on that, you know, the cows manage themselves. Yeah. Minimum inputs, really.
Just quickly on the yonis, I know that's not what we're here to speak about, but it is something that doesn't get spoken about enough, I think. Is that something that you've bought in, do you think? Is that?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, we've been very naive, to be quite honest. Yeah. I think we put a lot of trust in people. BVD was our biggest problem to start with. We got over that hurdle, and then the next hurdle was testing for yonis. And I was mortified to see that we'd got, you know, a number of cases of yonis in the herd. Having a winter calving herd as well made that problem even worse, in the fact, because the calves are exposed to the dung, and it was a real problem. So, but I feel, touch wood, that we have got on top of it. We've culled very hard for it. It's cost us a lot in good cows, and I will say good cows, that we'd put two sex semen, and we had heifers then coming through the herd that we had to destroy. Finish, you know, for whatever reason, you just go through either cull them out as cows or put them in the finishing yards rather than sell them as breeding animals. Yeah. And it, yeah, financially, it does hurt.
And you would never breed off a
No. Because otherwise, there's no point in doing all the work we've done.
No, absolutely. And your BVD, how did you know you'd got that?
Because we tested. It's a bit like any disease, I think. Until you actually have it, you don't realise the complications and how complex they are. And we realised we had a few calving problems 1 year. We'd been testing for BVD, but foolishly just tested blood testing cows. Mm. And then all of a sudden we bought some heifers in and bought BVD in, and it decimated our calving. We had so many problems calving beyond belief. Yeah. Cows giving up halfway through. And to be fair, you'd open the calving shed door in the morning and you just dread what you would find. We tested and we'd got BVD in the herd then, and changes the focus again and, you know, to eliminate it. So, and look, we've touched wood, we've eradicated now, we vaccinate, and we randomly test groups, young stock groups through the year, and, you know, it's we're top side of it, so I'm pleased to say.
I mean, one of the biggest things that affects fertility is disease, isn't it? And both those diseases just have a massive effect achieving a 9-week calving block. It just doesn't happen. Cool. Okay, right, let's talk about your breeding policy then on farm. So if we start from the beginning, just talk us through bull selection for breeding your replacement heifers from. What are you looking for?
So longevity, fertility, probably not as focused on daily weight gain. You know, I don't want a small cow, but I don't want a big cow either. They would be the key things. Longevity, I think, is probably one of the most important things for us, because a cow, the longer the cow's with the herd, the more profit she makes you.
Yeah.
Mobility, good use of forage, and that would be our key attributes. Fertility is a big thing, obviously, but it's quite difficult to look at a bull and know he's fertile.
Yeah, so you, when you go and buy a bull, you want to know about the whole farm, you're not just looking at that bull.
Pretty much, yeah. You try and look at as much information as you can and then try and dissect it to use the relevant information to what you think is going to assist you and what you're going to do. It's more difficult to choose a maternal sire than it ever is a terminal sign. Mm.
Yeah, they're much harder traits to measure, aren't they, really, I suppose? It's easier to measure growth.
Yeah, teats are probably a big thing. We would be quite focused on having a good udder on a cow, and bulls do have quite an influence on that. I do know a breeder that's got a really expensive bull that has actually brought in an awful lot of big teats into the herd that...
Okay, so... That's your bull selection covered off then. What about when you... you've got your heifers on the ground. How are you choosing which ones to keep and which ones to finish?
Our weight would be the biggest thing that we bull with more than anything else. Yep. Because obviously if it can't get to its target weight, there's no point in bulling it.
What is your target weight?
Target weight is 365 to 400, really. Minimum of 365. Depends, obviously, if that's the youngest calf in the herd, then it's quite relevant. But you know, having quite a tight calving pattern does help that. All from forage, really. No hard feed. Yep. We'd wean them at 10 months old and we would expect them to be over 300 kilos. Yeah. And then we would, because we're bulling in January, it gives us then time. They are in the sheds. We can manipulate that by good quality forage and how we feed them.
So if they're doing 300 at 10 months, that's not a huge... You're not chasing massive weight gains.
No, we're not.
You're just keeping them ticking
definitely
over.
Not, no. To be fair, there's a lot of them that are hitting the bulling weights at weaning, truthfully. You know, But we've got to be careful, you know, managing that weight is easy. Trying to chase weight is very much more difficult.
So if you've got loads and loads then that are all at bulling weight, then how do you whittle them down? What else do you look at?
So pelvic scoring is the next thing we use. And we started, and I know breed is, our average breed, Solaire breed is about 140 cubic centimetres. The vet tends to work them back regarding their age. But we've been doing this for 4 years. This is our fifth season, pelvic scoring. We started with a cutoff of 100. We've moved our target now to 120. And it's quite surprising how many were under that to start with. We had some down as low as 65 and in the 80s. We just obviously... So that was a big tool we used. Weight, mobility, to look at them. And then if anything we're not sure about or anything that sort of doesn't... We don't like the look of, we tend to look back at its mother and see what she's brought into the herd and what she gives us, and colour accordingly, really. We'd have an initial selection, and then pre-bulling we'd have another one to sort of see how they've performed in the yards on forage. And temperament's key as well. Anything that comes through the handling system that's a bit flighty, we do mark and we do check. And some of it's just stress from being handled, but generally, to be fair, all those traits, we're looking for a quiet, well... presented heifer that's up to weight.
So your pelvic scoring then, if you're coming into your fifth year, you obviously find a lot of value in that. You think it's worth doing.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. And I do contribute that to the fact that we calved 230 cows last year and I pulled three calves out. I did have three backwards ones that were born overnight, which calved us all. I did lose two of them, unfortunately. I do contribute that to them. And to put meat on the bones, we did have a second calver calving when we started to pelvic score. And the vet, when the cow had recovered, she had a dead calf. And it was an awful calving. When the cow had sort of recovered, we did get the vet to pelvic score that animal. And it worked it back that she would have been about an 80 cubic centimetre pelvis.
Right, so she was way off.
Yeah, it was a massive sort of tick in the box to say that what we were doing was helping.
And you would never have guessed that from looking at it from the outside.
And you know, some of the animals have got huge pelvises, some of them have got really tiny, but from looking from the outside you wouldn't know.
No. And you haven't found, so one of the things somebody said to me not long since is about constantly choosing easy calving bulls, which we would always advocate. You know, they don't have to be the easiest, but certainly below breed average. And somebody said that was potentially, or they thought, causing issues with throwing smaller pelvises in the females. Is that something that you've seen on?
Haven't yet. No. But bull influence is quite, the bull pelvic size is quite very relevant in heifers as well. So when it's quite interesting. We probably will, our next breeding bull that we buy for replacement heifers, I would like to know his pelvic size and then sort of correlate the information back. So that, see how relevant it is to going forward to your breeding heifers. So.
Yeah.
You know, I think all those things, all it is just gathering as much information as you can and then using it to your herd to form decisions.
Yeah. It's important to get that done by your vet, isn't it? Rather than having to go yourself, because each breed has got its own
set. And also try and use the same vet to do it all the time, because everyone they use the same vet, everybody puts it in the same place, and gives you the same reading consistently. So,
do they, whilst they're doing that, do they do any pre-breeding checks, check that they're cycling?
Absolutely. All those things, check that they're cycling, and just a general health check.
Excellent, okay. Right then, let's move on to your use of synchronisation and AI. Just talk us through, you know, what you would do on an average year, how many you do and that kind of thing.
So all the heifers that we select would go to a sync programme, regardless of number. We're not focused probably on numbers. We've been focused on trying to build numbers as quick as we possibly can to maximise use of infrastructure and fixed costs. Probably settling down now to more selection of animals that suit what we're doing. We don't buy anything anymore. We've closed the door on that. So we would have probably 50. I would like to think we'll have a good 50 coming in the herd this time, which will all go to a sync program. We AI them twice. We found that would probably be the most successful for us. We were 58% last year. 2020 we were 56%. 2019 we were 55%. 2018 was a complete disaster. 2017 was 53%. 2016 was 48%. And 2015 was our first year and we were 59%. The first 2 years we used collars, sync collars, And they worked very well for us. But the first year, the AI man came at 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm. Second year, he couldn't get to us. We were last call. So he might come from anything from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock at night. We just felt it was too big a window, yeah. which is why our percentage dropped off.
Yeah.
And then we went from there just to a sync program and have used it. So we're obviously in the high 50s
yeah.
for one cycle. And then we would sweep with the ball. Also, it takes the pressure off the balls because we have quite a lot of cows calving in that first cycle. So we do tend to sort of overload the balls into the cows to start with.
Yeah.
And then as they go into their second and third cycles, we feel the pressure's off the balls, the breeding balls then, so we can pull one back to put into the heifers.
Yeah. So that it's interesting what you said about the collars, because I know any suckler farmers that I know that are using collars are all autumn block, because it just lends themselves, you know, the transmitters don't pick up that well in the field, some of them, and all the rest of it. So, you know, it's the ideal sort of setup, but that is the issue, isn't it? Trying to get somebody here to serve them at the right time and time of service is so important on conception, right?
Very much so. I think, and I do think we could improve on that. And there is a point that you could, a case that we should be doing it ourselves, but we've just got too much going on.
There is. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I do know people that do it themselves successfully, but you have to get the practice in as well, which is difficult with a beef herd because you only do it once a year. Yeah, exactly. So, no, that is, if you're in an area of the country where you can reliably get an AI tech, fantastic, but it seems to be becoming less and less.
Yeah, and it's that, like you say, that consistent time every day, so that you've only ever got a 24-hour period.
So it's just worth saying those conception rates, as good as they are, they're with sex semen as well, aren't they?
They are,
so they're exceptional then with sex semen. So just talk us through that then. Why did you decide to have a go with sex semen?
The yonis was probably the biggest driver, because we were culling so hard, we needed to maintain our numbers and increase them. Our view was also increased. We thought that we could select the cows that we wanted to breed with, put it to a sexed semen, and, you know, produce ourselves a replacement heifer. And going on from that, we sort of felt it would accelerate our numbers. But we have bought heifers in. There is no substitute for breeding your own heifers. I'm on the farm in your system that suit, you know, your farm, and we always think it takes 12 months for an animal to settle in. Probably doesn't take that long for a heifer, probably 6 months, but it's still better if they're homebred. So that was the main driving force to increase our animals from our own livestock, really.
And I think they say with sex, 9 out of 10 will be a heifer. Do you find that you don't get many bulls?
No, we don't. We did. You do get very disappointed when you have a heifer with a bull calf. Because you've chosen them for the traits that you do, you tend to find they're quite small bull calves, and you're very disappointed. But we probably would be well in the 90%. You tend to find the bulls. If you're going to have a bull, you'll have it first. There's no doubt about that. Sinking them, if you're going to have any bulls at all, we'll have probably 2 or 3 bulls come for the first couple of services. Then you have a flurry of the heifers.
Yeah, okay. Just talking about sink programmes, a lot of people that I speak to them about are wary of them because it involves, it's perceived to involve a lot of work, and it's just not as simple as lobbing a bull in with your cows and your heifers. Just talk us through, I suppose, the mechanics of a sync programme, how many times you have to handle them and your time commitment and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. You do have to handle them quite a long time, and it is quite intensive as far as work is concerned. But if you've got a reasonable handling system, it's quite easy. And from a heifer point of view, it's like sending them to school for a week. You do tend to get an idea of temperament and all those things. And we have pulled heifers out of the sink program that have reacted so adversely to being handled, in that they're flighty and they don't like being in the handling system. We don't want to breed with animals like that. So there is good things that come out of it. So we would handle them probably 5 times to give them a double AI service. So the last 2 would be 24 hours apart, and I think it's over a period of 10 days. But by that time, they've probably been in, they've had the vaccinations, they've been in the handling system to be weighed, to be checked their daily weight gains a month or a fortnight apart. And generally, we would run them through the handling system quite regularly in that period. Even through the weaning, once they've been weaned, they would tend to just walk through the handling. It's easy to do here. One man can do it on his own without been any, you know, stress, so we feel that's quite important, really.
And you guys will do the whole sync program yourself apart from the first bit. The vet does that, put the seeder in, or the parade, whatever.
Myself and Richard do pretty much all of the livestock work,
yeah.
And we've set the system up so that it's minimum labour intensive, really. Yeah. So just a matter of opening and closing gates.
And I suppose the beauty of doing a sync programme is you can book your AI person Absolutely. To come at the time that needs yeah. to be. You know, you've got a specific time to serve them, haven't you? Yeah.
And also from a heifer perspective, having a heifer on a heifer is going to be probably, hopefully, an easier calving. You know, there's lots of pluses, but I think the biggest plus is because we calve when we calve. We're not handling them out in the fields. Mm-hmm. They're always, it's inside, the system's there. The cows are next to the handling system. It's quite an easy system.
But that thing about handling is so important, isn't it? Because, you know, I know a lot of spring calvers that use synchronisation programmes really successfully, but it is because of that handling system. They can run them through and out in no time at all. Because it's not a big... All you're doing is giving them an injection or pulling a prid out, and then it's probably the service that takes the longest, yeah. doesn't it?
And the trouble is, if they're only coming into the handling system very rarely, instantly, it's not a very nice experience for them, is it? So if you can just run them through there as many times as you can, that doesn't create that stressed environment, it's really important.
So just talk me through the attention to detail, because that's, you know, people say to me, I've done a sync and it's gone wrong and the conception rates have been rubbish, and then you ask them what they've done and they haven't jabbed them quite at the right time or this, that and the other. Just how important
is that? Yeah,
well,
I do think that's very relevant. We were getting up at, we wanted to, the AI gave us time slots when they could come, and we worked back from that. So mm-hmm. we did get up a couple of times at 1:30 in the morning to sync them up. But look, it's a small price to pay for what you're trying to achieve. You know, again, at once in the night to turn around and do those things, it's not the end of the world. Well, we don't feel it's the end of the world, and for us it's for the greater good, and I think it's worked for us, and we've got good heifers coming through the herd now, and more of them to choose from. And the more heifers you get, the more critical you can be of them, the better your bloodlines and your... For us, it's probably more the commercial focus, the easy you know, the easy calving animals and the animals that suit our system.
And that is so true, isn't it? Like, you, I think you were with us on that trip when we went to Ireland. That guy was using AI on 200 cows, and he wasn't sinking, he was doing it all off natural heats. And I think he'd said to us that his colleagues and peers had thought that he was mental, because all he did at bulling time was look at his cows and watch them bulling. And he just turned around and said, if you can't, you know, what's the most important bit of a suckler herd? It's getting them in calf, isn't it?
Absolutely,
that is an important time of the year. So management then, let's talk about management pre and post. So another thing that, you know, I get told a lot is that when you using AI, you've got to manage them better, for want of a better way of putting it. But actually, they need to be managed better to get them in calf anyway. Do you do anything different?
No, I think that's possibly why we're getting reasonable rates, because we're focused on forage. They're only fed forage. There's no hard feed in the diet. And because of it, their food is consistent. Mm-hmm. Their environment's consistent. We would wean them probably beginning of November, so they'll be already housed, so they're settled into the pens. They're used to our system, they're used to our feed, they're used to the minerals. All they have is grass and minerals. If we did need to manipulate the diet, we could add maize silage to it, but the danger is worrying about getting them too fat.
Yep.
So we do tend just to focus on grass, and I think because of that, they have the same diet going through there, from their sync program right the way through to going out, and I think that consistency helps.
Absolutely.
We still do get we still would have a few that would absorb naturally through their pregnancy, but I think you'd have that.
I'm gonna say that's just farming, isn't it? How long after service do they go out? How long do you keep them in afterwards?
So we would finish with this AI the second week of January, and then we would scan then at 30 days to make to know
you're scanning early then
to know which has got to the held to the AI, and obviously we're sweeping with another ball, and also with the sync program doing what we're doing, we can comfortably then give them two cycles with the ball, and actually they've had three, haven't they? So but we're still containing that really tight calving pattern.
And you're keeping them in the same group, so that's obviously minimizing stress. Vaccination, you said you do that over winter. How
we do that pre-bulling.
Yeah.
So so they will come in November, and that is part of their schooling, really going through the handling system, and they get weighed regularly and any vaccinations. And if we have a pretty awful winter, sort of mild winter, we would clip the backs out, so all those jobs will be done.
Yeah. Well in advance. Yeah. We don't want to be doing it at the same time.
But I wouldn't worry about doing those jobs up to handling through the system, because it's just getting them used to going through our handling system.
Fine. One big thing with synchronisation, how much is it costing you a cow?
So it's probably costing us about £120 an animal with vet, med, double C, double straws yeah. and sex semen yet, so it'd be about £120.
But when you think about that, though, you've got to think about the genetics that you're bringing in and the cost of keeping a bull and all the rest of it. So
we've still got the bull costs, obviously.
Yeah.
But we do probably use one less bull for the heifers pre mm-hmm. because of, like I say, using them in with the breeding cows and taking the pressure off them. So, yeah, we don't think it is expensive, but we probably feel that you're getting more value for money than...
Yeah. If you sat down and worked out all your other expenses, we were chatting before about calving difficulties and all that kind of thing, it's got to minimise those.
Lame bulls and all those things. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And if you... Oh, so, you used the collars and you did try serving to natural heat. Just what happened there then? What made you decide that you were going to sink them instead?
Because we used the collars successfully, the first year we were blown away at our conception rate. Yeah. So I think we were well in the 70% the second... Yeah.
And those collars told you exactly when they needed serving. Absolutely, was that the problem?
Yeah. Okay. They were brilliant. But it didn't suit the second season. So then we did hold off... And we just did the heifers in year three mm-hmm. Because we didn't. We've tried a sink program on about 20 cows, and it doesn't work for us for whatever reason. I think some of it is because each cow holds at a different stage in their cycle, and we couldn't always get that. Whereas heifers are probably a little bit more receptive to the AI. Mm. That we find that anyway.
Yeah.
And then year three, we had a complete disaster. And then we just felt it worked with the heifers because, again, we did have a bit of a problem getting our second calvers back in calf. And I do think some of that may be nutrition, but since we've probably focused more on making quality forage, that doesn't seem to be such an issue now.
Yeah.
And that was possibly the focus when we first did the heifers, to try and get them in calf instantly to give them more time to recover before they went to the bull for their second. I do kind of feel we've put that to bed now, because I think we're about 96% of our second calvers in calf last year. So
brilliant, within a 9-week block.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I kind of feel we've sort of addressed that problem. But yeah, that was the main reason when we first did it. But it works for us. And again, I think choice of bull... To the other reason, I think, which is quite important, with a Solaire as a breed, what you're looking for in a maternal trait is not the same as a terminal, and then you end up with bulls that grow like heifers.
Mm-hmm.
And crossing them with a Charolais bull, there's night and day between your maternal breed and your terminal sire. So from a profitable point of view, I think that selling those male Charolais through the bull yard compared to having a male Solaire through there, your female traits that you've chosen that bull for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's something that, you know, when I'm talking to people about AI, that is, I suppose, the biggest selling point of it. You know, you don't have to keep two different bulls. You don't have to keep a terminal and a maternal bull. Mm. You can do that with AI, and then...
Having your replacement hat on
for
your compared to your finishing hat are two different things, aren't they?
Absolutely,
But you need the maternal traits in there to give you a cow that to produce that terminal sire.
Yeah, and I mean, that is you know, the whole crux of this Maternal Matters campaign that we're running at the minute is that terminal traits have just been chased and chased and chased, and actually the fertility, if you look at the fertility of the UK suckler herd, it's diabolical compared to other countries as an average, because we just have not focused on those traits. So it's important, isn't it? But like you say, it's no good putting a maternal sired bull into a feeding, you know,
no,
into
absolutely.
A finishing yard.
And yeah, I think that will be the danger of trying to choose a bull that fits both. I don't know whether you actually can, to be quite honest.
They talk about curve benders, don't they? But they're few and far between. I mean, that brings us nicely onto, so that when you're choosing your sires for your sex semen, how do you get on with that? Because there can't be that many that are sexed for you to use.
No, there's not. And the selection probably is limited, to say the least. I think we've got a choice of 5 bulls. I think we've exhausted the first 2, to be quite honest, because obviously coming back onto their daughters. So, yeah, you probably have to put a bit of faith into the breed companies that are doing it, that their selection is for the right reasons, because you'd like to think they're picking a maternal traits for a sex semen sire, whereas not many others are. They're more terminal focused. So you'd like to think if they're offering a sex semen as a option, then they are focused on maternal traits in that bull. I think it is a problem, but you just have to roll with it, really.
And so with the sex semen, that will obviously help with calving difficulties as well. If they're having heifer calves,
definitely. And if they're not having heifer calves, if you do be unfortunate enough to have the bull calves, they tend to pop out quickly. I think heifers last year, I actually calved the heifers inside last year, and I had one cesarean For whatever reason, I couldn't tell you. And I think I pulled four out, but only because I was there. And it was the time of night that I was there, and I just wasn't comfortable leaving them to...
So four out of 50 or 60, isn't
it? Yeah, right or wrong, where, you know, you just, you did it because you were there.
Yeah. And it's so important, isn't it, getting them to calve easily the first time, because it just makes such a massive difference for the...
I think that bonding as well and everything as well. For the, if you're interfered with the calving, it's not great. Leave them to it and let them sort themselves out.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So repeat bullers then. Sweeper ball goes in. How long after service do you put him in?
10 days.
10 days.
Just from a management point of view, he would go in 10 days. He probably minimum of 10 days, but because we're using him with the cows, if we've got a spare bull, he'll lay with them. Mm-hmm. But usually we would leave it to 18-19 days.
Yeah.
Unless you see something bulling. Yeah. And then he would go in. And then he will go in for two cycles and then come out, and that's the end. Obviously, after that, whatever's not in calf, we scan at 30 days. And we would probably scan pre-going out when we scan the cows, because we will scan the cows before they go out to grass to know what's in calf, to know where we put in our portion, our culls and everything else. Just another management tool, really.
And do you find that you many slip a calf after the 30-day mark? It's quite early, isn't it, that, with the...
Not many. It's not probably the 30 days that we tend to slip the calf, truthfully. I think I wouldn't be surprised if we probably lose out of the 52 we've got this 51 we've got this time off. I wouldn't be surprised if there's two that are empty that looking at them may don't look in calf. But I think that's probably quite normal, isn't it?
I'm going to say that's really low. Yeah. So let's just go through. So you've told me conception rates. Let's just go through them again. So 58%, 56, 55. 2018 was a disaster, you said, which you know what the reason was. There was a very specific reason with that.
The sync programme was wrong.
Yeah. So that's at least, that's the thing, that is the frustrating thing with synchronisation programmes.
The collars were probably our best with the heifers at 59%.
Yeah.
And that was collars on heifers and cows. The heifers, we were 59%. The cows weren't quite as high as that, but we were into the 70s with two cycles. So we're back up to 58%, which I'm pretty happy with. I would think... Yeah, as long as your cost was, our view was that, so if you've got 50 heifers, that even if you had 50%, you've got 25 in calf to heifer females. If you then put the bull to the other 25, you are going to have 37.5 cows out of, or heifers rather, in calf female out of your 50. That's pretty good statistics, isn't it?
Absolutely. So. Yeah, it is, because they say, so... average conception rate to sex semen, I believe, is 90% of what it would be to conventional, if that makes sense. So, you know, there's this perception that you've got to manage them better because they're having sex semen. Well, cows don't get in calf if they're not managed well anyway. So, you know, it's and if you get a low conception rate with your sex semen, it's probably nothing to do with the semen. It's to do with something else. So,
I think the nutrition probably is one of the key 100%. Stabilities to it.
Yeah.
In the fact that they're all on a pretty easy nutrition program, rather than sort of adding too many things and complicating it.
For a long enough before you serve them as well. It's no use doing it 3 weeks before you serve them, because that egg that you're going to serve is produced in that cow way before so it's got
to
be.
Yeah, I think the sync program probably opens your eyes up to how dietary changes does affect them. I always worry about turning out from a stable TMR mix, really, when you've turned out, when they're inside, turning out and going out to fresh grass that's high in protein.
Yeah.
You always do worry about pregnancies at that stage in the game.
Just out of interest, before you sync them up, do you notice a lot of bulling? Do you do any reference heats or anything?
I wouldn't be focused on it, but you certainly do notice.
Yeah, you see them.
I mean, when you open the door pre-bulling and the whole shed's steaming and they're riding around each other, you sort of probably you know that was the worry when the sync program didn't work, you just didn't see anything happening.
No,
whereas it's carnage, to be fair, when you open the door when you sync them up.
Do you have any issues with stuff getting injured or anything? I mean, that's a lot to sync up, isn't it?
No, absolutely, yeah, especially having such a number in a group, and we do run them as a group. Sort of anything up to 50, or we're not over 50, but no, we've not had an issue. But they are, they're animals and they act accordingly, don't they?
It's always reassuring, isn't it, when you open the door and you see a lot of steam coming off them. How much is a straw of sex semen? Or how much are you paying?
I think they were £30 last year.
Yeah, so I mean, you can pay as much as you want, can't you, for a straw of sex
semen? Yeah, that would be the only problem with the limiting factor of what's available. But we think we paid £30 last year. We started the first time we did it, I think, with 19, so it has got more expensive, but everything's got more expensive.
Yeah. And if you are putting it on your heifers all the time as well, that should really accelerate the genetics of your herd.
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully. And now we're clear of yonis and we are heading down that route. I feel that we're in a much better position to select what we breed with and what we choose. So, and then going forward, it might give us the opportunity to sell breeding heifers then.
Cool. Okay. Brilliant. So, right, just sum up then in your own words, how, I suppose, using synchronisation and AI and sex semen in particular has benefited your business. Like, what would you say to somebody else that was thinking about doing it?
I think it's a brilliant tool to accelerate your genetics in your herd quicker than you ever would with a normal system. I wouldn't say it was probably for everybody because of the time of year when we're doing it. I think you can, if you don't look out, you could create an awful lot of work for yourselves by using an AI sync program. I think on a grazing system that was spring based, I think you might create more problems than yourself. Having said that, I know plenty of dairy herds that do it, that have the cattle outside and handling them all the time. So in my opinion, there'd probably be no reason why you couldn't use it on a spring system if you wanted to. But I think you've got to want to do it.
Yeah.
And you've got to look at every view. Some people it might not suit because it's too complicated and making too much work for the sales. But for us, yeah, it's definitely worked for us. It's increased the availability of animals to come into the herd that we wouldn't probably have got by using a conventional system.
Yeah, and that's something that I can't stress enough. Like, you can see the attention to detail when you come on your place anyway, but it's not, if you're going to do a sync program, you've got to do it properly, haven't you?
Yeah,
to the
no
letter.
Point. Yeah, it is expensive. And that year that we had the problem, we're fortunate that it was covered and we didn't have to fund that bill, but it is expensive, it makes you realise. But then our sow are having a bull running around that goes lame and giving you can't have enough bulls at bulling time, but the rest of the year they're a pain in the backside to you.
Yeah, exactly. What do you do with your bulls, just out of interest, that when they're not working?
I run a bull with the heifer group because obviously they go out and calf, so he lays with those. I try and run two bulls together in other groups of cows because, again, they go out with in calf, so there's not that competition out there. And yeah, they're difficult. It's difficult to sort of know what to do with them, to handle them properly. I don't want them inside.
Won't be fit to work, will they? They'll be fat and lazy by the time it comes to.
They want to be outside grazing, the same as everything else is. And we just manage it with groups of cows. Keep them obviously away from the heifers. That's the advantage of doing the autumn cut, well, winter calving, I'll call it, is all the none of the heifers see bulls at all.
Yep.
So the cows go out in calf. If they're not in calf, then they go into a cull group. So the bulls don't need to run with any groups of heifers. So we haven't probably got that drama of young heifers getting in calf with a bull.
Yeah.
I think you use the tool to suit your system. And there's no doubt that winter calving suits our system for handling cattle and our workload and our grass production outside.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Well, thanks so much, Pete, then, for that. That's really useful. From my point of view, we've got just some take-home messages, I suppose, the things that I've taken from your disease status, huge one. Know your disease status, make sure you check for it, which is something we say a lot. But I think, as Pete quite rightly said, it's only when you actually end up with a disease that you realise how much of a mess it can make of things. Am I right in saying
and
that?
And the complexity of the disease itself, in that you probably don't ever, when somebody talks about it, so-and-so's got yonis down the road. But until it actually affects you and your business, you don't realise the implications it has on a knock-on effect it has to fertility and nutrition, lameness, everything.
Yeah.
Even down to cows not pushing when they're calving. You know, we had a lot of that with BVD, they start calving and that was it, they give up.
Yeah.
It definitely affects you.
Yeah.
We're very focused on that now.
Cool. Pelvic scoring was the other one that I've got down. You've obviously got found huge value in that, and you don't have to be a pedigree herd to do that. You can do it on commercial heifers as well, but I think the thing to remember is that you cannot tell from the outside. You can have the biggest heifer in the world and she'll have a tiny, tiny pelvis. And I suppose it's give it a few years out, would you say? That's right, so you can see the change.
Yeah. And you'll see how it changes in your own herd from your first figures to the last set of figures. It's changed for us dramatically. And there is a pattern forms from cows with big pelvises breed calves with big pelvises with the right bull. So I think it's very relevant. But there's not a silver bullet that fixes all problems. It's just another tool to use when you're selecting animals.
Yeah. And speak to your vet about that, because it is a vet job and they'll be able to talk you through that. Think about AI availability is the other thing I've got written down. It's no point doing a sync program and then finding that you can't get anybody
to
serve.
Find out the availability of the AI first.
Yeah, and make sure that person is properly trained and competent and all the rest of it. Using synchronisation as a tool, a management tool, to give your heifers that little bit longer when they come into second calving, that is something, you know, when we talk about calving at two, it's, yes, it's getting them to bulling weight, but actually a lot of the problems I think people find come at getting them in calf the second time round.
And we did.
Yeah.
And nutrition, I think, is the key to that. Yep. And like I say, we didn't do that very well, and we did have some offline land that we used for our heifers initially. And the difference in their growth rates to back home was probably about 30 kilos,
yep.
which you don't think is significant, but it's a month.
Yeah.
And those heifers were missing a month of growth, and we really did see that in poor grass. So, yeah, graze. I think nutrition is key to the success of all of this, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and nutrition was the last point I'd got written down, because you're absolutely right. It's so important.
I think we're fortunate enough we saw that early in what we're trying to do. And now our focus over the whole farm really is on everything doing what it's doing off forage. And there's certain animals can do it and certain that can't.
Yeah.
It's the key is to focus on the ones that can and keep using those into your herd. And I think we have been pushing that. We're not focused on any one thing, but that would be the one thing that would be always come to mind, is the focus on quality forage and quality grass.
Yeah. And I suppose coming back to basics a little bit, one of the main reasons that you know that you've got that right is weighing regularly, isn't it? Which is something people still don't
and
do.
And those heifers, those second calving cows, you know, that came to light for us because we couldn't get them back in calf. And you have to remember, they're trying to grow, get in calf and feed a calf.
Yeah.
And they're struggling to do that. And it's perfectly achievable with a heifer that calves at 24 months old, but you just need to manage it accordingly.
Need a bit more TLC, don't you? Cool. So just a note then about sync programs. Pete said he handled his cattle five times with his sync program. There's quite a few available out there, and I'm not even going to try and go through them, but don't be put off by that. It works for Pete, but there are sync programs that, you know, enable you to handle them less. So speak to your vet about that. And we also have a document on our website that just goes through it a little bit for you. There's loads of other resources on our website. We've got a Maternal Matters website now, ahdb.org.uk/maternal-matters, which has got everything from feeding to fertility to AI and sync and everything in between, bull selection. So please feel free to have a look at that, and take a look on social media over the next few months. There'll be a lot of videos and that kind of thing from farmers all over the country that are calving at two and all doing it slightly differently, but letting you know how they make it work. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you to Pete for giving up your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.